Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Happy Friday. We're online at theunionedge.com, Facebook, Twitter, I don't know, all over the place, on your airwaves, you know.
Check us out,
having
guys.
Parties.
That's right. And speaking of parties, coming up next week, September 23rd, it's a Friday evening, 5 to 7 p.m. We're going to be at the Teamsters Local 406 Union Hall in Grand Rapids. You can find out ticket information online on our website, www.theunionedge.com. I can say I'm excited about it. And hey, who doesn't like to get together for a good reason and come hang out? Because I would really love to meet you guys. So come check us out, guys. That's my plug.
Yeah. And joining us now, we have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, ladies, to get you started on your weekend.
That's
great to
right.
have you. And you brought Tom Good with you as well.
I did. I brought Tom Good. He's the resident officer of the National Labor Relations Board in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I've known Tom since 1995, and when I started organizing back in the day for the plumbers and pipe fitters. Tom, thanks for joining us on the Union Edge. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Buck, and hello to Brittany and Angela and the Union Edge listening audience.
You know, I got to ask you, I know you guys break out in a sweat every time I bring up politics, but it just is a simple answer, and I was thinking about people in my generation or somewhere close. Isn't this the weirdest election you've ever seen?
I think I can agree with that statement without running afoul of the Hatch Act, which is a law that limits the types of partisan political activities that
right.
federal employees can engage in. So I can ring that bell. It's been weird, and it shows no sign of letting up until November.
Well, when we get done with a segment, maybe we can revisit this thing that you just brought up about how you your situation. Thanks, Tom. The thing we're going to talk about, you know, employers routinely, they always discipline people for, you know, or terminate employees for conduct which takes place in their workplace. You know, we always are aware of that. But the question of the day is, can or should an employer discipline or terminate an employee for employee conduct which takes place outside of the workforce?
Well, I'm going to leave aside whether it's something that an employer should do, but I will say that there are a number of circumstances in which an employer can, in many cases we've seen where employers have disciplined or discharged employees for conduct that the employee engaged in away from the workplace and while they're off the clock. certainly, if an employee disparages the product or the service of the employer.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the employee is engaged in union activity while doing it, an employee can lose her protection under the Act by conduct like that. The employer is entitled to expect employees not to trash their product or their service, and so we've seen some cases where employees, even though they might have been engaged in, let's say, a strike or organizing activity, if they in a public way go about trashing the product or service, the employee can lose the Act's protection and then can be lawfully disciplined or discharged.
So, in other words, if you're making Ivory soap and you go out there and tell everybody in the country that Ivory soap is terrible and it's bad, don't buy it, they could fire you for it.
That's correct, and I'm not sure if you said that the Ivory soap doesn't float; it actually sinks to the bottom of the tub. If that would
okay.
get you in trouble, but certainly,
okay.
If you said it was a bad product and it didn't get
right.
clean, you could lose the Act's protection.
Does the National Labor Relations Act cover all employers? That's a good question.
No, it does not. The Act excludes public sector employees. So really, it's really only private sector employees and the Postal Service. By a special act of Congress in 1970, Congress turned jurisdiction over the labor relations of the United States Postal Service to the NLRB. So Postal Service employees and private sector employees, but only those private sector employees whose employers meet the board's jurisdictional standards. Remember, and we've talked about this in earlier interviews, that the only reason that a federal agency like the National Labor Relations Board can come in and start regulating the labor relations of a local business is because Congress gave the Constitution gives the Congress the right to regulate interstate commerce. So employers, in order to come under the board's jurisdiction, an employer has to be engaged in interstate commerce. Now, it used to be a lot tougher to say that an employer was engaged in interstate commerce before the New Deal. But since the New Deal, since the 1930s, 1937 to be precise, the Supreme Court took a broader view of what it means to be engaged in interstate commerce. And now it's a fairly broad definition. In fact, it's kind of difficult to find a private sector employer these days who is not engaged in interstate commerce to the degree that would bring them under the NLRB jurisdiction.
Well, that's interesting, but you know, I guess how far do they really go? I mean, I'm just having trouble getting my arms around how these employers.
Okay,
do they have like in different states? Do they have legislation that covers these laws in the state or in the county level?
First of all, there are still employers that are not engaged in interstate commerce such that they would come under the board's jurisdiction. Now, and of course, there are lots of public sector employees who work for school districts, county, city, municipal employees. Those are all public sector employers, and they are not covered. They are not covered by the National Labor Relations Act. Now, some states, including Michigan, have stepped in to create NLRB-like laws for those employees as well. In Michigan, we have something called the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, or MERC, and they their statute, that law is drawn in parallel to the National Labor Relations Act, so a lot of the same procedures and legal standards that we apply when we're investigating unfair labor practices or conducting elections, they do the same sort of thing for those public sector employees in Michigan. And there are a lot of states that have done the same thing.
So in other words, a state employee, basically, if they have some sort of issue that would be covered under the Act, they can't come to the labor board and pursue that because they're not covered by the Act, correct?
That's correct. They would have to inquire of their own state government whether there is a Public Employee Relations Act, a PERA, or something similar. And you could call your state representative to ask about that if you had a hard time finding the contact information online or in the phone book.
So basically, they're basically just what we consider too small of employers to be covered by the board's act. The standards, correct?
The board has limited resources. We're actually a fairly small federal agency, the board early on felt it had to draw a line somewhere, saying that some employers just were too small, had too small an impact on interstate commerce that the board would not assert jurisdiction. As long as there is some interstate commerce, and it can be either direct or indirect, that's an important consideration. For instance, a local carpentry shop might purchase all of its lumber from a local lumberyard and might do all of its work in a local in a locality and might think, well, I'm not really engaged in interstate commerce. Well, if they purchase, more than $50,000 worth of lumber every year from that lumber yard, and that lumber yard purchases from out of state drill bits, saws, carpentry supplies, then both the lumber yard and the carpentry shop are both engaged in interstate commerce, and the board could assert jurisdiction over both enterprises.
You know, one of the things I always wondered, Tom, and you, as you were talking about whether someone had the right to, the employer had the right to use conduct out on their private life to perhaps fire someone. Say someone was, you know, say arrested, and for any number of crime. Let's just say perhaps a felony. Could an employer terminate a employee at that point?
A fact of work life in America is that there are really only a handful of unlawful reasons that an employer could decide to discipline or discharge an employee, and unless it's one of those unlawful reasons, then the employer is free to discipline or discharge for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all. To take your example, if an employee were arrested or even charged with a crime that the employer felt reflected badly on the business, if that was the true motivation, the NLRB would not find a violation.
Well, what happens if say it happens and someone gets fired and through due process they're found completely innocent, then what?
Well, there's no automatic reinstatement for that. The employer... once again, there's no legal requirement that once an employee is found innocent by the government that an employer would have to reinstate them or bring them back. Now we have had cases when we're investigating whether someone perhaps was unlawfully discharged because of their union activities. Well, we've had cases the employer discovered that an employee was part of an organizing drive and then went back and took a real good hard look at their employment application, found something, here's a misdemeanor back then, let's fire the employee for that. Obviously, you know, that turned out to be an excuse. The real motivation was to discharge an employee for their union activities, and we have and we will find conduct like that to be unlawful, and we'll go to bat for that employee to have him or her reinstated with back pay.
We're speaking to Tom Good, the resident officer of the Grand Rapids office of the National Labor Relations Board. I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Happy Friday. It's good to be here with you, Brittany.
All right, guys, we've been having a lot of fun. Thank you all for tuning in and joining us today. It has been a great day, and I can't wait to kick off this Friday. And to help us finish things off, we've got Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you, ladies, on Friday.
Always great to have you.
It's always great. Also, we have Tom Good today. He's the resident officer of the Grand Rapids Office of the National Labor Relations Board. Tom, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Buck. Thank you.
Before we took the break, we were talking to Tom about a topic. Can or should employers regulate employee conduct outside the work? And this has become a lot bigger issue than I thought. Where we left off is how we talked a little bit about what was covered, who was covered, and why. Basically, state employees are not. What about, let's say, school bus drivers, Tom? Say they start out working for the city. You point this out, city school system, and then you know, like a lot of in our neck of the woods in Grand Rapids, they privatized, and bus drivers came from a company named Dean. Now, tell us a little bit about that. Are they covered?
Well, I'd rather not talk about a particular case.
No. In general.
Yeah, in general. Yes. Well, while while bus drivers are employed by a school district, a public school district, or a city or a county district, they would be public employees and they would not be covered by the National Labor Relations Act. As we said in the last segment, depending on what state they're in, they might have a similar law that protects their right to bargain collectively or to vote for or against union representation, but that varies from state to state. However, and there's been a wave of privatization, and school bus drivers across the country have found this happening to them, that the school will stop operating the buses and they will hire a contractor to run that. And many times the contractors want to retain the school bus drivers because of their familiarity with the routes in the city, and they don't want to have to train a couple hundred bus drivers all at once to head out on the first day of school. They value the experience of those drivers, so they often hire some or all of the drivers who previously worked for the city.
Right.
Now, if those drivers were represented by a union when they worked for the city, and the private contractor hires among its workforce, they have a majority of the employees who came from the old bargaining unit employed by the city. Mm-hmm. Then we call that contractor a successor to the bargaining obligation. If a majority of those employees came from the old bargaining unit, and the old union shows up and to the contractor and says, "Hey, we still represent these people."
Mm-hmm.
The employer would have an obligation to bargain, and they would be covered by the National Labor Relations Act. They are now private sector employees. And all of the rights and obligations of the National Labor Relations Act would accrue to the employees, the employer, and the union.
You talked a little bit about board standards and perhaps asserting jurisdiction. Tell us, there's probably a difference between retail and non-retail, right?
Well, yeah, that's the big division, or those are the two standards that the board uses. And when we say non-retail, we're basically talking about business to business, a business that provides that maybe manufactures parts for another business, or that provides services to another business. Those we call those non-retail. And non-retail businesses have to come under the board's jurisdiction, have to be engaged in interstate commerce to the tune of $50,000 a year, and it can either be direct services and goods crossing state lines directly to that employer, or indirectly through an intermediary customer or supplier. Retail operations are like stores and restaurants, enterprises that seek to satisfy a consumer's desires. I want to go buy something at Target. Target is a retail outlet, and in order for the board to assert jurisdiction over a retail operation, they have to meet a dollar volume that the board sets, and that's something that varies from business to business. But generally, it's $500,000. A year in gross volume, and if that business brings in $500,000 a year from selling its products or its services, they will come in the board's jurisdiction as long as they can also show that there is at least some interstate commerce. There always has to be an element of interstate commerce for the board to assert jurisdiction, but it doesn't always have to be $50,000 if you have a retail operation that
I know we're running short on time here, but I need you to see if you can, because this is the ultimate question. What about organizations that operate on public funds? Now that turns to be a toss-up for you guys, right?
Well, as long as it's a private sector enterprise, it really doesn't matter where they get their funds. The board will, as long as they meet the definition of employer, they hire people to perform work, Now, there are some like public service enterprises that that operate on exclusively on grants, and they are you might say they're quasi-public. They have boards of directors that are that sometimes include elected officials or people who are appointed by elected officials. The board looks to see whether a majority of the board of directors are answerable to public officials, and if that and when that's the case, sometimes the jurisdiction, the board will not assert jurisdiction because they figure that's really a public entity.
Tom, thank you very much today. I appreciate it. I know we're running short. We could talk another hour about this. What the website, the government website?
It's www.nlrb.gov. You can call our toll-free number, which is 1-866-667-6572.
So the answer to the question of the day is, and the question was, can or should employers regulate employee conduct outside of work? And the answer is, in some cases, they can, correct?
That's right.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom. That being said, for Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, and Laura Weens, I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio, where the struggle is real.